afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is freight and land use, making the connection. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Before I go any further, I do want to mention that you will probably notice that the look and feel of the web conferencing environment, for those of you who have participated in the past, is a little different than usual. Federal Highway recently upgraded to Adobe Connect 8. Everything should work basically the same, but if you have any questions, please let me know. Today we'll have three presenters: Teresa Brewer of the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Solutions, Howie Mann of the New York Metropolitan Transportation Council, and Chris Lamb of Cambridge Systematics. Typically I'd read the presenter bios before the seminar starts, but in the interest of time, I'm just gonna keep going now. I just wanna go over a few logistical details prior to starting. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will be unable to answer your question during their presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all of the questions that have been typed in, we will see if anybody has any questions over the phone, but most likely we will just stick with the questions typed in since we have so many people on open lines today. If you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning listserv. And if you haven't already joined the listserv, the web address at which you can register is provided on the slide on your screen. Finally, I'd like to remind you that the session is being recorded, and a file containing the audio and the visual portion will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next few weeks. We encourage you to direct others in your office who may have not been able to attend to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen, and the presentations will also be available online, and I'll notify all attendees of the availability of the PowerPoints, the recording, and a transcript. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, you must type your first and last name into the chat box. I've included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits, and I also encourage everybody to download the evaluation form and submit it to me after you've filled it out. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic is freight and land use, making the connection, and our first presenter will be Teresa Brewer of the Anchorage Metropolitan Area Transportation Solutions. As a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered in the last 30 minutes. So with that, Teresa, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We are very cold in Anchorage today and very windy. However, looking forward to discussing what AMAS is. And just a brief outline is, what is AMAS and what is the Freight Advisory Committee? How do we take our Freight Advisory Committee activities and integrate those goals and policies into freight transportation planning? And then follow up with some questions. However, before I get started, I'd really like to thank Laura Edwards with the Alaska Department of Transportation Public Facilities Commercial Vehicle Enforcement for her help on this presentation. And then also our chair, Aves Thompson, who's also the director of Alaska Trucking Association. And of course, all of our Freight Advisory Committee members. Just for those who might think we still haul freight via sled dog, we don't. It still is used in Alaska, and that's the way things were done. But we have many modes of transportation, from the Alaska Railroad, of course, air, marine, barge, and the trucking industry. We also have pipeline, but that's primarily to get oil out of the state. Many people don't realize that the Port of Anchorage serves as a hub for the state of Alaska. 90% of all of our freight comes in through the port and then is distributed throughout the state via all the other modes of transportation. Also, the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport is fourth in the world for in-transit cargo landing, and number two in the United States. So we have a lot of freight traffic. What is AMAS? AMAS is a federally mandated metropolitan planning organization, and we serve a population of about 300,000 individuals. budget. I believe our budget might have been $15,000 last year. So we definitely would like to do more for freight. And what AMAS does is we do a lot of the local transportation planning through our long-range transportation plan. And as part of that effort, we have freight as an element in our long-range transportation plan. And as a result of that, we coordinate with other agencies, we input from the freight community, and we take that and we put it in our long-range transportation plan. The Freight Advisory Committee was reestablished recently, and some of the individuals that are on that Freight Advisory Committee are the Alaska Trucking Association, Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport, and a lot of the big box retail, FedEx, UPS, AODT, MTF, the Port of Anchorage, the University of Anchorage, and many others, and I'm sure you can read this slide on your phone. And so as I mentioned earlier, the feds require that we establish a freight advisory committee and that we address freight in our long-range transportation plan. And that's why the freight advisory committee is really important to obtain that input. Some of the issues that we face, like many other areas, is our freight is also expected to double by 2020. So we need to know what projects that we need to prioritize, how we prioritize them, where some of the bottlenecks and the problems
are. Yeah, look over here. There's a new passcode.
So some of the freight advisory committee members and the freight industry help us with that. And here's just a map of where forecasted problems are. Anchorage is highly geographically constrained. We have the Kinnick Arm and Cook Inlet to your west and Turnagain Arm down to your south. We have mountains to the immediate east, and we only have two highways coming in and out of Anchorage. And if you look towards the Kinnick Arm area, that's all of our port, our military, and our downtown area. It's highly congested, and we have to move freight in and out of that area, and we have a lot of conflicts from pedestrians, tourism, commercial, buses, public transit. So it's a really important area for us to take a look at and do some future problem solving. So what some of the freight advisory activities that we've done and completed a problem intersections area survey. And as part of that effort, we developed a survey for truckers, and we looked at a map, and then we took a bus tour, and with truck drivers, with DOT engineers, with transportation planners, and we drove around the city and we asked them, where are the problem intersections and what are some of the solutions for those intersections? And some of that could be signal timing, delay, medians, curb cuts, and all that. So here's just a draft of our problem intersections area map and a copy of our survey, and we're happy to provide that to individuals if they like to see it. Some of the other freight activities that we've done, let me step back a moment. As part of that survey and that map development is looking at bottlenecks and congestion, the Freight Advisory Committee hired a consultant to develop a freight prioritization study. And what they're looking at right now is determining a weighting method based on three criteria, which would be crash, accident, number of accidents, traffic volume, and then the survey results. And they're in the midst of taking a look and examining that rudimentary tool for prioritizing freight projects in the future to bring forward for recommendation to our technical advisory committee for inclusion in our capital improvement program or our statewide improvement program. Another activity that we've recently undertaken through the University of Alaska is the installation of GPS units in freight trucks, so we can get some real-time freight tracking. We can find out where is freight going, what part of town, what time, and how we might be able to utilize that information to plan better freight routes and better methods of getting freight through town. One thing that we learned from our freight survey is that 10 years ago, we could move freight from the Port of Alaska, or Anchorage, I should say, southward toward Seward and South Anchorage, and it's taking almost twice the amount of time to get freight down to that area. We're also going to be presenting the results of the GPS installation and the data collection from that study in April. And a main part of our activities is coordinating with other agencies, such as DOT, such as Commercial Vehicle Enforcement, the freight industry, the Chamber of Commerce, the Alaska World Trade Center, the National Defense Logistics Transportation Association, to gather that data that we need, because I'm sure many of you know that freight data is very difficult to obtain. We don't know exactly where our freight is moving and what time. We use a quick response method through our Transcad modeling system. And so as a part also of the learning about how freight moves through town, we were able to partner with Carlisle, and they have a big computer simulation training computer. And so we invited engineers from the state, from the municipality.
Roberta, or I'm sorry,
engineer.
Teresa, can I interrupt you for a minute?
To teach us how difficult it is to drive a big rig through a suburban or highway or urban area, and so these individuals could see how difficult it is to move over medians, around landscaping. And another important piece of that forum was they brought drivers in and told us about some of the issues that they were facing while they were driving. And one of the issues they had was with an overpass that we have on Muldoon, and they have oversized, overweight vehicles that they move late at night, and they couldn't go from up the ramp off the highway over to the other side because there was a median nose in the way. So they would have to go up, take the oversized, turn around at a local high school, and then turn back around. And so in talking to Scott Thomas, who's engineer with DOT, they figured out that they could work on this, and they had already done some preliminary design. And as a result, now they can pass through and not have to turn around and have that liability from the freight industry side. They were concerned about getting into accidents and then who would be liable for that. So it was a really great outcome. One of the other activities that the Freight Advisory Committee does, and I really want to thank Laura and Ace for their dedication to this, is they take a look at road design projects and site plan reviews. So we will look at big box retail expansion. What is the access for freight there? We'll look at road design such as roundabout, signal timing, the port access, and of course I mentioned the oversized freight. And the next slide is just a typical site plan review for a big box retail. And one of the main reasons that I seek help in from the Alaska Trucking Association and from DOT, Commercial Vehicle Enforcement, and from the freight industry is I'm not a truck driver. I don't know how difficult it is to maneuver and navigate through parking areas, landscaping. Is the loading docks adequate enough? And so it helps us deal with parking, access management, and some other issues that the freight, if we could just make it a little bit easier for them, although they are not a large percentage of our traffic volume, they only make about 6%, and certainly the municipality of Anchorage cannot build or maintain, you know, huge freight boulevards or corridors, but we can certainly take a look at smaller projects that we could implement that would help move freight, because people rely on their medicine, their groceries, all kinds of other things. So that has been really great to get their input. So as part of a review, and this is for another road, I will put forth the recommendations brought forward by the Freight Advisory Committee. They are advisory only, they're ad hoc only, but we can bring forward comments that they make, and hopefully they'll be taken into consideration on some of these road projects. Some of the other past freight successes that this group has had is getting improved capacity at certain locations downtown, expanding C Street. The South Anchorage area is developing and more freight is moving to that area. They have a lot of gravel operations through there. And so we're able to help them a little bit better.
Teresa, can I interrupt you for a second? somebody's phone is not on mute and we can hear you talking, please mute your phone. All lines are open right now and everybody can hear all background noise. If you don't have a mute button, you can press *6. Thanks.
I know that was difficult because I could hear individuals speaking and I was trying to think at the same time. So thank you for muting. Some of the future freight improvement projects that are DOT sponsored, many of our facilities that are in Anchorage are all state owned. And then the municipality of Anchorage manages the local roads. So we have a national highway system going straight through downtown. So one of the projects is a highway-to-highway corridor, which would link the two access points of freeways that are coming through Anchorage, and that would be the Glen and the Seward. Some other work that we're doing is some traffic signal timing. The municipality of Anchorage operates and maintains 258 signals on behalf of 268, excuse me, on behalf of the state of Alaska. And so we're doing some timing. Some of the challenges that the Freight Advisory Committee faces and some of the things that we're moving toward is we need to find successors. We need to be able to fund projects for them so that they can move forward. And obtaining input and keeping the group going is one of the challenges and one of the learnings that we had early on in order to establish credibility. We initially had the group meet, and there was an oversight. We were also developing our criteria for our transportation improvement program, and we did not seek their input at that time, and that was a huge lesson learned because we really needed their input. And so getting on the right foot, establishing credibility, working with the freight industry to have them understand that you're advocating for their needs along with private passenger vehicle operations too, has been a huge lesson for us. It's been great to partner with numerous agencies to obtain their data. Commercial vehicle enforcement has a lot of freight data, accident data, that we can't easily get our hands on. Some of the things that we're moving forward toward is using this framework as a structural framework for hopefully a state freight advisory committee. We have upcoming future projects that could impact the state of Alaska, ranging from the natural gas pipeline, the Northwest Passage, way up on the North Slope, where a lot more shipping and marine operations are occurring. So where will this freight come in? We know Anchorage is a hub. How are we prepared for it? Another area that we're doing a lot of work on is freight route designation and identifying routes that need to be designated within the Anchorage area. And then trying to get our code to be consistent with state regulations for freight. We have Title IX, which addresses truck weights, seasonal use of roads, and they're not consistent currently with state regulations. So that's another area that this freight advisory team is working on. They've also done a lot of work on trying to put in legislative financial requests for studies for port access. So they're trying alternative methods to seek funding. They're working with the Port of Anchorage to apply for a stimulus planning grant through the stimulus dollars next year. And granted, unless we have reauthorization, probably all of us are going to be having shortfalls in our budget. But that's just a quick overview of what we do in Anchorage. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I would be glad to talk with people via email or on the phone. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Teresa. I know we have a few questions typed in, and we'll get to those at the end. I also want to thank everybody for their patience with the audio conference. I think we have everybody on mute now, so let's keep it that way moving forward. I'm now going to turn it over to Howie Mann of the New York Metropolitan Transportation Council. And Howie, I will bring your presentation up in a minute. Okay, you
Thanks
can go ahead when you're ready.
Thanks very much, Jennifer. I'd like to welcome everybody to Talking Freight today, and it's a pleasure to be here. I've participated many times as a participant, not necessarily as a presenter, so it's a real thrill to be here. What I'm going to be discussing today is what's known as a freight village, and my presentation is going to cover looking at several different characteristics, and then what I'd like to do is discuss with you an approach that NIMTEC has taken in looking at one possible solution to numerous freight challenges that the NIMTEC region has. So let's start by answering a question you may have: exactly what is a freight village? Well, this is the definition of a freight village. There are many, many freight villages that have been developed all across the world, and I'll be getting into that in just a minute. But in a nutshell, in a generic sense, a freight village is a defined area, and that's the key. It's an area within which many different types of self-supporting or mutually supporting activities exist. They are concerned with transportation, logistics, distribution of goods, as well as activities that exist for the support of the people that work in the freight villages themselves. Before I continue, let me just tell you real quick, give you some real quick background as to who NIMTEC is. New York Metropolitan Transportation Council, or NIMTEC, is the metropolitan planning organization for the 10-county downstate New York metropolitan region. It constitutes about 2,400 square miles and has about 12 million people living here. So having said that, in the next slide you can see it's pretty much what a freight village looks like. You can't tell very well by looking at this, but it's necessary to know that it is a very clearly demarcated area within which the activities that I discussed earlier exist. And I'll have some photos to show you as we go through the presentation to give you an idea of what these places look like, so just bear with me. So, as I said, I want to discuss with you some of the things about the NIMTEC region that have caused us to look at freight villages, and later in the presentation we'll talk about the study that we're currently engaged in on freight villages. So what are some of the things that you would want to think about or look at and analyze before you look specifically at any freight solution? In our region, demographics, of course, and we'll have some slides concerning that, land use, and transportation. So we're going to look at these three issues, these three items right now. So on the employment side, as you can see, for the nation, employment grew more than it did for our local region. Of course, this is something you would want to be concerned with if you were interested in looking at potential freight solutions to your challenges. One of the other things that we are interested and concerned with is air cargo employment, because JFK International Airport is one of the largest air cargo facilities in the United States, and recently was noted as being the gateway in the United States that was handling the highest value commodities in the entire country. So it's a pretty important facility. And does it have a relationship to a freight village? It might. It's something to consider. It's certainly an anchor to freight activities in the region, although we have many, many more, including some of the largest port facilities in the region as well. In terms of our economy, what I can say is that New York's manufacturing industry has declined over many, many decades. The economy is much, much more focused now on the so-called FIRE industries, and that stands for finance, insurance, and real estate. Of course, we're also noted for other things such as telecommunications and home to many Fortune 500 companies as well. One of the other things that we need to focus on is the characteristics of the population in terms of their income. As you can see in this slide, at least in our tri-state area, the NIMTEC region has the highest average hourly wage of our neighbors, including New Jersey and Connecticut. So I mean, we need to start asking questions. Are these things that might mitigate against the development of freight facilities where they don't currently particularly in Manhattan, is its population density. Manhattan is the most densely populated area in the entire United States. And does this have an impact on how freight is distributed and how it's delivered and handled? Well, the answer is yes. And we'll certainly be considering this as we go through the study. In terms of land use, as you can see in this slide, and as I mentioned earlier, New York at one time had a tremendous manufacturing and industrial economic base. It doesn't really exist that much anymore, as you can see, in terms of how it's manifested in its land use. 6,000 acres or so, about 4% of New York City's area devoted to industrial uses, very small, whereas it's compared to New Jersey, there's quite a bit more space allocated to freight and freight-related activities. And this is important for the NIMTIC region because, for the most part, New Jersey is home to many of the freight facilities that are actually necessary to serve the NIMTIC region across the Hudson River, such as the distribution facilities, warehouses, major freight rail freight classification yards, truck terminals, and things of that nature. In terms of the transportation factors that we looked at, as you can see, one of the corridors, one of the highway corridors in the NIMTIC region that experiences the highest truck volumes is I-95, particularly going across the George Washington Bridge. And this slide gives you an idea of just how large those truck volumes are. In fact, not only are the truck volumes themselves high, but as far as the mix of traffic in the on the roadways themselves, that in some places in the NIMTIC region, truck traffic or commercial traffic actually comprises about, in some cases, about 30% of the traffic classification. So it's huge. We have a very large intense reliance on trucks in this region. In fact, it's one of the highest in the United States. So again, that's something that we think is important. It's one of the factors that we wanted to better understand as we went through this this study that looked at freight villages. Also, to give you an idea in terms of transportation, just why we are so concerned with freight transportation is illustrated in this figure called truck trip purposes. As you can see, the focus of these truck trips for most freight trip purposes is focused on really the core of the NIMTIC region. You can see all those trips emanating from places like New Jersey and even further west from Pennsylvania, and most of the trips are all aimed at the NIMTIC region, seeking to deliver things like retail goods, supplies, and things of that nature. So again, this all specifies the concern we have with freight. With freight. And taking it down even further, Jennifer?
Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure what that is. I don't know if somebody else is...
Sorry about that.
I don't know if somebody's getting another call that's on the phone. I'm not sure, or if someone may have put us on hold, which might be causing that. I'm going to type a note into the chat box, because seems like it stopped.
We were also interested in looking at what kind of truck trips are traversing the region. We broke them down into commodity and non-commodity truck trips. Truck trips are the very large trucks, and the non-commodity trucks are essentially the smaller delivery trucks, delivery vehicles, and that kind of thing. But what the takeaway from this slide is the actual amount of vehicle miles generated by these truck trips. And as you can see, it dovetails with what I said before about the location of the freight industry that largely serves the NIMTIC region being west of the river. The largest amount of VMT is situated in New Jersey. However, we in the NIMTIC region experience very, very large amounts of vehicle miles of travel because of this reliance. country can relate to these objectives, probably could actually use them in your own planning. But for the NIPTC region, these certainly are key because these objectives really relate to the issues that I discussed with you earlier. And I'd like you to all to keep in mind these objectives as I go through my presentation, because when we go through the Freight Village study later in the presentation, you'll see how these are related and how they come into play. So let's talk a little bit about freight villages. As I said at the outset, freight villages are really located all across the world, including places like Europe, Japan, and other countries. There are 60-plus freight villages of all different types in the United States. They're located around the world in about 11 countries. In this slide, actually, I think I left out Asia, but they're there also. So what do freight villages do? What kind of services do they provide? Well, for the most part, the primary services are multimodal services, such as truck, rail, that type of thing. They provide warehousing and distribution services. They may provide or may have an intermodal truck, rail, terminal as part of the site. And they all may also have customs clearance and or freight forwarders located in the same area. But they also have these ancillary services, and this is really what makes freight villages really interesting. Freight villages of different types may also include these supporting services, such as food, motel, hotel services, and other supporting activities, as you can see here. And many of the examples that we looked at in Europe and other places were also noted notable because they had very good transit service as well. And freight villages can be run and managed and operated in all different and all manner of arrangements. I'm not going to go into that in a lot of detail, but suffice it to say there are both public-private arrangements as well as totally private arrangements also. So why are we so interested in freight villages? It's because they can accomplish some of these types of items that you see here, such as creating efficient movement of freight. They promote economic development by providing greater amounts of employment. And as you saw in the previous slides, we're very concerned with truck miles of travel. And freight villages and other places have been successful in actually reducing truck VMT. So we're really interested in these types of arrangements for that purpose. And under community design aesthetics, I have some photographs that I want to share with you. Give you some idea of just what they look like. These examples that you see here, these are examples from Chicago, Illinois. This is actually a steel or metal manufacturer known as Finkel Steel. It's been located in Chicago for literally decades. So you can see these types of industrial activities, and Finkel seems to be rail served. They don't necessarily have to be ugly facilities, but they can be very attractive facilities that are integrated into the neighborhood and are actually good neighbors. Here are two examples of suburban freight villages that I wanted to share with you. These two examples are the same facility. They're located in New Jersey in Raritan, a location I had a privilege to visit. It's very, very inspirational to go there and see the operation and see how attractive it really is. As I was saying, that the freight village experience largely comes out of Europe. This is a map that basically shows the location of a freight village located pretty close to Paris, but actually located adjacent to the airport there. And here are two examples, one's located in Germany, the other one in Japan. And the one on the lower right, I think, is interesting because, as I said, the NIPTC region is a densely settled area, densely populated area. And in Japan, where it's also densely populated, they decided to build up. As you can see, it's a vertical format in that building. That building is really a truck terminal. And so I thought that was an interesting example to share with you. When you are thinking about these facilities, think had existing infrastructure, such as utilities. You would want to know what the labor costs are. If you recall, on my previous slide, I showed you the high average hourly wage for the NPTIC region. You'd want to know you were in close proximity to customers and reduce your transportation budget. And you would also want to know something about the community that you were locating in and the site characteristics. So getting to the study that NPTIC undertook, our purpose was really pretty straightforward. We weren't looking to do a study in which we recommended an area, but what we wanted to do and what we set out to do was to look at the feasibility of the concept and applying it to the NPTIC region, considering the issues that I discussed with you previously. So as we started this, we had no idea whether or even if the Freight Village concept would be a match for our region, but as it turned out, in some cases, it was, or it will be. These are three sites on Long Island that we looked at, with six sites in total. There were three more that we looked at, two in New York City, that's Sunset Park in Brooklyn, and one additional site on Staten Island. And the last site is in Westchester County, in the northern area of the NPTIC region. So we did look at six sites. And as I said, I'd share with some photographs, some aerials with you of the six sites. As you can see in the these two Long Island sites, they are not necessarily surrounded by high rises or anything like that. In fact, the Calverton site, as you can see, is pretty much in a pretty wide open area. The Leitrim site is a suburban location as well, and is actually more surrounded by higher levels of residential single-family homes. The Gaddick site, located on Staten Island, was and has been an industrial site. And the interesting location, Sunset Park in Brooklyn, is what you might expect to see in New York City. And the area surrounding it is apartment buildings. And it's one of the very few areas left in New York City that is still very, very much industrial in nature. And lastly, there's the site in Mount Vernon, a city that's located in Westchester County, the northern area of NPTIC. And as you see here, this site is pretty much surrounded by quite a bit of residential development. This is basically an in-place industrial park. So what we do in the study itself, we are going through these tasks. As you can see here, we're pretty much up to and have completed task five, and we're proceeding into task six, looking at just what the benefits of these six locations would be as freight villages. Not going to spend much time on this slide. The takeaway from this slide, at least I think for you or you all are a concern, is that what we did in terms of developing criteria and sub-criteria for examining these six sites was really derived from a Delphi process, which is an iterative process that you use in trying to determine the importance of various factors. So these are some of the criteria that we ultimately derived and that we ultimately applied, and the sub-criteria as well. Again, using the Delphi process and developing the through a facilitated expert panel. In this slide, you can see how we sought to apply the concepts of each type of freight village against the NPTIC goals that we talked about before, such as congestion mitigation, land use, and economic development. So as you can see, each type of freight village doesn't necessarily relate well or at all to the goals that we set out. So that was something that we had to address. So we came up with this analytical process, at the end of which we derived these criteria and sub-criteria weights that were ultimately applied to the factors in each site. And here are the sites with the applying those weights to the sites for each one of these criteria and sub-criteria through the expert panel. And we went through it for each one of the major categories of criteria. So the takeaway so far in the study is that each of the six sites has some degree of potential to be some kind of freight village. We had to kind of think out of the box because in some cases, some of the locations didn't fit neatly into the categorizations of freight villages that we were able to develop based on examples in other countries and in other places. So I think that's important because, first of all, it means there's more work to be done there in terms of the private sector looking at managing the site, bringing it together, possibly developing a central theme, working with the public and the government to bring in additional types of land uses. So there's a lot more that needs to take place before these sites can really take off as freight villages. As I indicated before, we actually completed up to task 5 just recently, and task 6 will probably be completed very, very quickly, and then we'll be wrapping up the study in probably about a month or so. So what are the next steps? Based on the 6 sites that are continuing, that we are going to continue to look at, we're going to look at the truck trip estimates for the region, not necessarily for those local specific areas. We're going to analyze them for economic development, specifically for job creation. We're going to look at what the impacts of these sites as freight villages would be on cost, all of these types of costs. And we're going to also analyze them for their potential to be able to shift to rail from truck or from truck to waterborne mode, considering the Niptic region only uses rail to the tune of about 1% of its freight needs. So there's more work to be done. This is our very long web address that you will need to get to the freight page on the Niptic website, where all of the information is available, including all kinds of downloads and more information. And if you have trouble navigating to that, please give me a call or email me there. And it's been a real pleasure discussing this with you today, and I look forward to your questions and comments. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Howie. We're now going to move on to our final presentation given by Chris Lamb from Cambridge Systematics. And Chris, you can begin.
All right. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Chris Lamb, and I work with Cambridge Systematics. We just heard 2 presentations on some new and innovative approaches that planners are using to address issues related to freight and land use linkages and conflict. And currently, we are helping the FHWA to develop a freight and land use handbook that explores these issues and supplies action plans for planners at all levels of government and for private sector stakeholders, and a series of workshops to be hosted by agencies early next year to present this material and to work with agencies and stakeholders to address their freight and land use issues. So I'll spend a few minutes on each topic, exploring the contents of the freight and land use handbook and the workshops that will come about afterwards. So to start with the purpose of the handbook it's intended to serve, it's intended to provide planners at the state, regional, and local levels with awareness of issues and with some implementable strategies and tools to address some of the key problems regarding freight, transportation, and land use conflicts and issues. Some of these issues include the encroachment of residential and other incompatible uses upon freight land uses, sprawling suburbs and revitalizing urban and town centers, and the conflict that trend creates, growing volumes of freight traffic and activity resulting in more congestion on the transportation system, and the associated conflicts between passenger and freight traffic related to that, the freight doesn't vote problem, meaning the absence of a voice for freight when it comes to local planning and decision making, transportation planning processes that don't always take freight impacts and needs into account, and land use and zoning site plan reviews that don't always take the freight transportation considerations into account either. And also the increased importance on the connection and relationship between freight transportation, our patterns of land use, and climate change. features of the handbook, it's designed to appeal to a wide audience, and in so doing, it offers general guidance and an introduction to the planning processes, freight issues, land use issues, involved agencies and stakeholders, etc., for planners who may not have much experience in some of these areas. For more advanced professionals, the value will be in some of the specific tools, methods, and action plans, and lessons learned from some of the examples and case studies that are provided in the handbook. Amid the text in each chapter, the handbook provides some sidebars with brief examples of relevant problems and strategies that agencies have implemented to address them, and it has a number of more detailed case studies that demonstrate how agencies and stakeholders have addressed complex or combinations of issues through effective and innovative programs, policies, and methods. The case studies are intended to provide examples of successful implementations of programs that other officials can learn from and replicate as appropriate to their situations. And finally, the handbook provides as appendices a list of key resources for further reading and a freight and land use glossary as guides. The sources of information that were used to develop the contents of the handbook drew from a variety of literature sources, quite heavily from NCHRP reports and syntheses, other US DOT and FHWA handbooks and guidelines, EPA literature on sustainability issues. And the case studies and examples were derived from information published in the literature and from a series of interviews that our project team conducted with several agencies throughout the country, mostly MPOs and some municipal representatives as well. Who were known to have relevant and insightful experiences and programs. And in fact, the two previous presenters, Teresa and Howie, were interviewed by our team, and their stories, which you've heard today, are among the case studies in the handbook. And I'd like to thank them for their input into the handbook, and as well, there were some other folks who we reached out to who are on the line today, and we want to thank you for your contributions as well. So here's a list of the chapters that are in the handbook. And I'll summarize them here before going into a bit more detail on the content in the following slides. But Chapter 1 contains the purpose, the key features, and handbook organization that I've discussed already. The second chapter provides a background on transportation planning process, land use planning process, the key steps, agencies that are involved at different levels of government, and the linkages between those processes. Chapter 3 is our quote-unquote freight is a good neighbor chapter. It discusses some of the impacts freight transportation infrastructure and land uses have on the communities and the environment, and offers some suggestions on policies and strategies that can reduce some of those impacts. Chapter 4 discusses the issues of sustainability related to freight, the impacts of land use trends on freight sustainability, and some examples of sustainable freight land use strategies. The final chapter advises the reader on ways to account for the needs and impacts of freight in their planning process, including site selection criteria, site plan reviews, and zoning codes. It includes a set of recommended action steps for planners and action steps for private stakeholders as well on how to get involved in the process. At the end of the handbook are the appendices that include the resource list and glossary that I've mentioned before. So having summarized the contents of Chapter 1 already, we'll jump right into Chapter 2. Why should freight be considered in the transportation and land use processes? What are the benefits of freight to the economy? What are the disbenefits and impacts? What are the driving forces that necessitate the integration of freight into the planning process, such as freight volumes, infrastructure finance challenges, etc.? Those are some of the questions that this chapter addresses. The chapter identifies who the stakeholders are on both the public and private sector side. It identifies their duties and roles, some of the issues that are critical to them, and how they all fit together in the process. This chapter presents the key steps and products of transportation and land use planning processes and the linkages between them, including the involvement of land management and resource agencies, including economic development strategies that link the two, including the incorporation of strategies into comprehensive plans, and project selection criteria that are consistent with comprehensive plan goals, et cetera. Chapter 3, as I said, is our freight is a good neighbor chapter. And it takes a closer look at some of the impacts of freight land uses, by which I mean warehousing, distribution centers, manufacturing facilities, intermodal and transload terminals. Those are the types of freight land uses that we're talking about. And looks at some of their impacts on on neighboring land uses. This gets to the heart of some of the environmental impact and NIMBY issues. The chapter makes the case for what makes freight a good neighbor, achieving a balance between freight and industrial land uses and community goals is what does that. It's the insurance that the impacts of freight are positive, such as jobs, wages, tax revenue, and that they outweigh the negative impacts, which are then mitigated and minimized. So it addresses several topics here. The first is appropriate and coordinated land use policies, such as regional visioning, establishing buffers between incompatible land uses, promoting context-sensitive design, etc. It looks at effective transportation systems and services, the development and maintenance of transportation systems that can effectively, efficiently, and safely accommodate freight and passenger traffic, and limiting the conflicts between the traffic types. Examples of that are truck routing to avoid impacts on neighborhoods, freight-exclusive facilities, reducing at-grade crossings, etc. Looking at effective operations and management policies, existing transportation systems that can be operated and managed in ways that reduce peak period demand and therefore reduce congestion, and in ways produce fewer negative impacts on to the quality of life and environment, such as no whistle or quiet zones for rail, etc. Looking at education and outreach, because having an educated public and an educated public sector and an educated private sector stakeholders helps tremendously. So strategies to equip planners with knowledge and tools to disseminate information, to provide technical assistance to other agencies, and to provide opportunities for community and freight stakeholders to be heard and to learn from one another are key. And then the chapter concludes with a section called Putting It All Together, which demonstrates through a series of detailed case studies how several government agencies throughout the country have tied each of the previous four sets of policies and practices into a successful program. And the graphic on the right here shows the City of Chicago's designated industrial card as a planned manufacturing district, which are intended to preserve freight land uses and focus development in appropriate areas. So if we take a closer look at one of the aspects of this chapter, to give you a sample of some more detailed content of the handbook, let's look at one of the subtopics and examples under the appropriate and coordinated land use policy setting. So within the section of the chapter, as with the other sections, the handbook provides a general discussion of land use policy issues, coordination issues, and then provides a list of appropriate tools that could be implemented to address those issues, such as establishing a regional vision, incentivizing appropriate development, creating buffers between incompatible uses, using zoning to limit freight impacts, and promote context-sensitive design for site plans and buildings to reduce those community impacts. There are examples provided from cities, regions, and states, large and small, that demonstrate how these tools have been implemented to achieve the objectives. For instance, conducting a regional visioning exercise at the MPO or state level can help stakeholders gain a common understanding of the freight and land use environment in the region. It helps them understand the issues and needs and to develop regional goals. From literature and interviews, some examples showing how these tools have been implemented are provided as well. And in the case of regional visioning, we provide an example from the Pittsburgh area's Power of 32, which is helping a region of 32 counties understand the demographic and economic trends in their region, to understand the common economic ties and interests among the counties and stakeholder groups in that region, and to develop a vision for the region's desired future. And similar explanations of implementation examples are provided for each of the tools and strategies in this section and in the other sections of the chapter. So moving on to chapter four, this chapter looks at sustainability issues related to freight and land use. It identifies what some of those key issues are, including emissions, climate change issues, economic development and industrial preservation issues, and social and environmental justice issues and impacts. It examines some of those impacts of land use trends and of poor planning practices on aspects of sustainability. For example, the phenomenon of freight sprawl, where freight facilities are developed ever and ever farther into the hinterlands outside cities and towns, result in the consumption of land and resources, spreading traffic, could result in urban disinvestment and a number of other impacts. This chapter identifies and provides some examples of some sustainable freight land use strategies to counteract some of and to take a closer look at some of the examples of sustainable freight and land use strategies that are identified in the handbook. These include preserving industrial and freight land uses in cities and towns by establishing protective districts and directing growth there, by redevelopment of brownfields for freight and industrial use, by establishing freight villages, which are defined areas where activities related to the transport, logistics, and distribution of goods are centered. As with the previous chapter, examples of each of these strategies are provided. And while examples on this slide come from larger MPOs, they provide examples of strategies that are transferable to smaller metropolitan and to rural regions as well. The final chapter, Chapter 5, demonstrates how to account for the needs of freight in the land use and transportation planning processes. Those needs include accounting for site access, on-site turning radii, loading and parking spaces, the enforcement of curb parking in urban areas, safety and security concerns, and a number of others. This chapter provides action plans for local, regional, and state planners. For local planners, the action steps include accounting for the needs and impacts in site plan reviews, analyzing truck routes, reviewing comprehensive plan, providing guidance and toolkits for developers and other stakeholders, and involving them in the process. For regional level, action steps include leading regional visioning and goods movement studies, creating regional and corridor freight plans, creating model ordinances and best practices that provide technical assistance to local jurisdictions. At the state level, including freight criteria in the project selection process, accounting for freight needs and infrastructure design, creating state and corridor plans, developing toolkits to assist cities and counties and highlight case studies are some of the steps there. For example, the Montana DOT has developed a toolkit for communities struggling with impacts resulting from rapid population growth, and they've pulled information from peer communities across the country to serve as examples and guides. For private stakeholders, action steps include participating in committees and in the development of freight plans, offering opportunities for public sector officials to learn about business and operations, and Teresa discussed a couple of examples of that, and commenting on planning documents. So to give you all an update on the current status of the handbook, we've developed a draft of the content of the handbook that's been prepared. It's currently under review by FHWA, and we'll likely have some edits to make to that content, and then we'll develop and produce format proofs, and once those are approved, we'll have a handbook ready for dissemination, which is likely to occur in early next year. And starting in the first of the year, we'll be working with FHWA to prepare and administer a series of freight and land use workshops. The purpose of the workshops will be to disseminate the contents of the handbook to planners at all levels of government and other interested parties. And participants can include freight, land use, and transportation planners and professionals at the state, regional, and local levels of government, and other interested parties such as private sector stakeholders. The workshops will last for one day and will include a presentation module on the contents of the handbook, likely one lesson per chapter, case studies for discussion, and we'll choose from a list of cases those which are most relevant to the issues confronted in the participant experience. And they'll also contain hands-on planning exercises.
I believe somebody has put their phone on hold. Hopefully they'll read what's in the chat box. Okay, sounds like we're good.
Great. All right, so all that said, we'll work to develop the workshop materials, and we'll likely be ready to conduct the workshops by late spring, early summer of 2011. There will be three workshops initially, and FHWA may conduct more if warranted. The dates and locations for these three have not yet been selected. We'll be working with FHWA together to determine the locations. And they'll likely be selected from a population of interested host agencies based upon factors such as geographical diversity, accounting for urban and rural mix, and a number of other factors. And I'll add that if your agency is interested in hosting a workshop, please get in touch with either myself or with Ed Stracco at FHWA with your information, and we'll take you into consideration. And we'll conduct the workshops then and develop a summary report on the outcomes for FHWA. So that concludes this presentation. Thank you all for your interest in this topic, and again, thank you to the other presenters who have provided content to this handbook development process, and to the many others who we've reached out to as well. We really appreciate your help. So my contact information is provided here in case you have any questions that come up later or that you'd like to discuss offline. And I think we are ready to move on to the question and answer section.
Okay.